are allowed to stay in about half of their cases. In contrast, 9 out of 10 kids without an attorney are deported. Most of those held in Artesia have no lawyer to help with their asylum claims. For those who are able to connect with an attorney and win a hearing, the meeting is held over a 20-inch video screen with a judge in Arlington, Virginia. Then, if their fear is considered credible, the mother and child are kept in detention, held without bond, while their cases are resolved. Again, Laura Lichter.
If the government insists on sticking with expedited removal, there is no such thing as a fair trial. This is no way to treat people. This is something that we should be ashamed of.
For Democracy Now!, I'm Renee Feltz in Artesia, New Mexico.
And thanks so much to Renee, who shot and reported that story. Earlier this month, a second detention center for women and children opened in Karnes City, Texas. This one is run by the private prison company Geo Group and has another 600 beds. It's reportedly already full. We'll link to more information at democracynow.org. That does it for the broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aramate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkapani, Masood Arbi, Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today's show is entitled, Enough is Enough.
We're now approaching Newport, Rhode Island.
KBOO and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present one of the great concert films of all time, Jazz on a Summer's Day. A documentary of the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival, Jazz on a Summer's Day, captures the music, the crowd, and the essence of such jazz greats as Louis Armstrong, Thelonious Monk, Jerry Mulligan, and Anita O'Day. Jazz on a Summer's Day, Thursday, August 14, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Old rocking chair's got me. Old rocking chair got your father.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the inaugural Montevilla Jazz Festival at Post 5 Theater, August 16th and 17th. This two-day music festival focuses entirely on the new sound of Portland jazz. It features a diverse lineup of 13 cutting-edge, adventurous, Portland-based jazz acts performing only original music. Performers include the Blue Cranes, Tim Wilcox Super Jazzers, the Optic Nerve Trio, and more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival at Post 5 Theater, 850 Northeast 81st Avenue in Portland, Saturday, August 16th and Sunday, August 17th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. On August 18th, the city of Portland will roll out a new Enough is Enough program. It is from the Office of Gang Violence, which is under the mayor's office, who is also the police commissioner. Now, the purpose of this new program, this quote-unquote community partnership, is to get community members to tell police about murders that have taken place in our community and to help police solve crimes. Now, when I first heard of this program, I was a little worried because anytime I hear about police community partnerships, it's more about the police and less about the community and certainly less about partnership. But the events over the last few days and quite frankly, over the last few years made me really want to say enough is enough, but less like not avoid the white elephant in the middle of the room. And the white elephant is, why would any black child talk to the police under any situation. When we look at what's been happening in this country for way too long as it relates to police violence in communities of color, and as we reflect on what happened just this past weekend, but again, I want to say it's not just the case that just happened that is making people crazed. Certainly the young man who lost his life in St. Louis is not the only person who has had that experience with the police. In fact, there was a gentleman, Eric Gardner, 43-year-old black man, who was killed by a chokehold by a New York City police officer just a couple of weeks ago. His crime, the police allege he was selling individual cigarettes in New York City, and that is against the law. But he was held in a chokehold, even though witnesses say this gentleman kept saying he couldn't breathe. He couldn't breathe. We're supposed to now believe that the investigation of these New York City police officers are now going to be handled by the Department of Justice. Just this past weekend, of course, unless you've been living under a rock, you know Michael Brown was an 18-year-old black young man who recently graduated high school, was on his way to college. In fact, on Monday of this week, would have been his first day in college, was headed to his grandmother's house with a friend, walking down the street, approached by police officers in St. Louis. Witnesses say his hands were up, and the police officer, for some reason, shot and killed this 18-year-old unarmed black teenager. We are now told that this killing of an unarmed black teen in St. Louis will be investigated by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Again, we'll get back to who's investigating what. What normally happens in a case of a police officer killing an unarmed man is that the police investigate the police to determine if they did anything wrong. If you have been watching the news, St. Louis continues to be a kinder box because this young man, this 18-year-old young man, isn't the first young man who has been shot and killed who was unarmed by St. Louis police. So what I believe we have is an epidemic in the United States of America, and the epidemic is a lack of value of black life. No other community has police walking in just shooting people under these kind of circumstances with no real accountability. And so I know there have been many conversations about what's being called riots in St. Louis, what others and myself included call urban uprisings, because at some point, people get tired of non-action of the people who are in positions of power to change this. And so when people realize that the system's in place, the elected leaders, the police commissioner, the police chiefs, when people start realizing that seeking justice through official mechanisms doesn't work, then people will develop other mechanisms to seek justice. It's kind of ironic to listen to Amy Goodman talk about Egypt 1 year later after the eruption this morning. And I can't help but wonder, because as I see the pictures coming out of St. Louis, it just sends me back to 68 and any big city, any big urban environment, and the riots that were taking place. And it was for the exact same reasons. And what's ironic is it's the same thing. There's no economic opportunity, poor education systems, lack of employment opportunities, lack of living wage jobs. I mean, these are the things that create the kind of And then the police, who see their role as to contain, control, harass, intimidate people into submission. And so when you have those combinations over a long period of time, you you should not be surprised when eruptions happen. I want to make sure that you know that there is a national call today at 7 p.m. Eastern time, which would be 4 o'clock our time. There is going to be a national day of silence. There's at 7 p.m. Eastern time, there will be people will gather and have a moment of silence and respect for the people who have lost their lives to police violence. My understanding is that here in Portland at 4 p.m. at Pioneer Square, there will be a gathering that will meet there. This is a complicated conversation. I want to have it respectfully. I hope that people who are police or who have been police and their families will feel free to call and join this conversation, because what we need to come to grips with is that we can't have it both ways. We can't continue to say that we have a well-trained community policing force and that our goal is to protect and serve people in the community and continue to have these incidents of police violence that takes people's lives unnecessarily. And so while we have had that experience here in the Portland metro area, we've had it in other parts of Oregon, we've certainly had it in Washington State. I mean, this is not a new situation. What's new, I think, is that people are getting to the point whereas they don't believe that change is going to happen through the official processes. And so we're going to go to the phone line in just a sec. Hello, Mr. 60. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning. Hello, Mr. 60, are you there? Hello, hello. I think we may have lost Mr. 60. Hopefully he'll call back. Do we have another caller? Okay, so anyway, so what I want to make sure that we talk about today is how do we change this culture that lacks value of Black life? What will it take so that young Black men don't feel like they have to change who they are to walk down the street in their own community? The things that I am hearing about what's happening in St. Louis is just really frightening. I would not be surprised if today we hear that the National Guard is being called into St. Louis, because again, we have developed military solutions to crime in our local communities. The reality is that as the military continues to give their weaponry to local police forces, as police forces continue to acquire this high-impact weapons that they use. I understand in St. Louis they brought tanks out into communities of color. And if you think that's only going to happen in St. Louis, you are living an illusion. Do we have... Hello, Brian. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne.
How are you today?
Good. So, listen, I just wanted to throw a couple insights I have into this, if it's okay. You know, I there was a Amy Goodman thing this morning about a young man that was shot in L.A., just handicapped. I believe he was African-American. He's on the ground, and the police shot him, like, Monday.
Right. Oh, yes. That was one I came across yesterday. The interesting thing is that if you look, you can find about one a day.
Right. And I would really like to point out two things here, if I could, that, you know, George Bush, before he left office, brought a brigade of troops back from, I believe, Afghanistan or Iraq. I can't remember which. And they were brought back to Ohio. And this was reported on Democracy Now, actually. And there was another one. But they were brought back to Ohio. And they were being trained, and they were veteran troops of the war in civil unrest. Mm-hmm. You know, and if I'd like to point out one more thing, that St. Louis and East St. Louis, East St. Louis especially, was a bastion of Black culture for a long time before, and it was one of those places, you know, like the Harlem Renaissance and it was one of those little parts of the cities that was destroyed intentionally by planning and urban development and all that sort of thing. So I really think that this is not a mistake. This is a war on black people in the United States, and it's getting pretty blatant.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much for your call. Okay. I appreciate it, Brian. You have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Enough is enough. We are really sick and tired of police violence, and we need to figure out how do we have a police force that protects and serves without them becoming judge, juror, and executioner on the street. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, hello, Joanne. Enough is enough. Started a long time ago, and I know I get booed for saying this, but we shouldn't be celebrating July 4th and Labor Day anymore until these crimes stop. Bye.
Bye, Joanne. You are so absolutely right. I mean, I think it's time for us as a country to figure out kind of what kind of country we want to be. Do we really want to be a country that's under police control, where very few people get to decide how the rest of us live? I got to tell you, this is, you know, I am not a believer in conspiracy theorists. But when I see that this kind of action takes place over and over and over again and all over the country with no repercussions at all, it's really disgusting. And then I find out last night, as I was listening to the news, that the Ferguson cops decided to fire tear gas in the people's yards, not because people were protesting or throwing things or attacking them, but they had decided that people should not be on their own streets in their own neighborhoods. And if people walked out their door, they would shoot tear gas canisters into their backyard. Now, again, it's like, is this like, should we just like be looking at St. Louis saying that's an anomaly? If you think that that wouldn't happen here in Portland, you are deluding yourself, because these are the most heavily armed military force that you could possibly have. Portland is right up there. They have all the weapons of war that the St. Louis police have. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Ann. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Joanne. Listen, I wanted to say that I think Enough is Enough is a wonderful name for a nationwide program about police murder, mayhem, and misconduct.
Yes, I agree.
I think there needs to be a national convention. I know there has been in the past, but I'm really beginning to feel that there's enough support in all communities, Hispanic, white, black, Asian, for something timely, because I agree with you totally. If people think that that the police won't use their power against any community that gets out of line, then they truly are they're just unaware, and that's what's really frightening to me. Although, if you listen to the KBOO show earlier this week, where the CRC and the IPR representatives were speaking, a couple of older white women called in. And they had been mistreated by police. Now, of course, they weren't shot, and they weren't thrown on the sidewalk. But they are beginning to feel it's like the tremors of an earthquake, in my opinion. And people who are sensitive have felt it for a long time.
That's right.
And people who have been unaware are getting the picture. You know, so I really hope that that we can start something here in Portland. That I think actually taking their words, enough is enough. Why don't we take them?
Well, which is exactly why I took it. I mean, that's why I'm blatantly honest that I stole it right from the mayor's office new campaign, because if you really think that people are going to somehow feel comfortable actually seeking out police to give them vital information to solve crimes. At the same time, those individuals are being brutalized by those same individuals. There's a disconnect. And so I want to give you a piece of hope. I've actually been working for the last 3 months with a fabulous woman out of Seattle named Harriet Walden and a wonderful woman out of Spokane, that Liz Moore. And we've been talking about doing a Pacific Northwest convening next summer around community responses to police violence. What's interesting is Seattle has been at this a lot longer than we have, and they have some information that they could certainly share to help grassroots efforts in this region. The same with Spokane. They've had some really successful efforts that we could all learn from. And of course, us here in Portland have had some experiences that we could share with this region. And so I like your idea about the national convening, but I think having a regional convening first, and you know, maybe California would want to be a part of that as well. Having a regional convening first that leads up to a national convening could be pretty powerful.
That sounds wonderful. I mean, I'm in, and whatever you need, well, you know, I'd be happy to join in that effort. I think that the Northwest convening sounds like a very good idea. Mm-hmm. And like you said, we need to band together with what has worked.
Right.
I mean, at the moment, I haven't seen a lot that's worked.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I was in a small town of less than 100,000, and they bought a tank.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's the scary thing. I mean, the scary thing is that why would any small police department need a tank, right? I mean, you buy a tank because you're planning to go to war. Now, and who do you go to war with? Well, you go to war with the people that you're opposed to, or the ones that tell you that paid for the tanks, right? The ones that paid for the tanks, right? You go to war to protect them. I think we're creating this environment that if we regular people aren't paying attention and educating ourselves, we're going to wake up one day and find out that we are not allowed to be down certain streets, that we're not allowed to be in certain neighborhoods. I mean, the fact that we can be ignored by City Hall already is one thing. But I am really fearful. What happens when the next major protest happens? What happens when the next death happens in Portland at the hands of Portland police? Because it will happen. And the question is, what happens when that happens? Are we prepared as the people to take some additional action? And what is that? Thank you so much for your call. Stay tuned, because we're going to definitely be planning this convening, because it's going to become more and more necessary that we get more people educated and involved, and just making sure that the police do the job we want them to do. Somewhere along the line, they lost sight of the fact that they work for us. And rather than
can I just say one more thing?
Yes, you may.
Yeah, in light of what is happening and the awareness is raised for a moment, could everyone call the mayor's office like I did and tell him that he needs to meet with Dan Handelman of Cop Watch? Because that's at least one first step. He's rejected. He doesn't want to meet with a pretty established group.
So what I understand is that the mayor and Open City Council Chamber agreed that he would, in fact, meet with Portland Cop Watch as a group. And then as soon as they went back behind closed doors in City Hall, Deanna Weston Mitchell, the police officer that pretends to be the community liaison between the police bureau and the public, has said to Dan Handelman that he cannot meet with the mayor unless he meets with her first for 2 hours. Now, why would anybody want to meet with a police apologist when their desire is to meet with the police commissioner to get the police commissioner to make policy changes? And
exactly.
So,
I think we should protest and say, look, they have to meet with a representative. I mean, they have to meet with a representative of Cop Watch. anyway, so if everybody could call the mayor's office, even if I think 20 people call, they're going to get the message.
Well, I think, quite frankly, that I agree with you. I think people should call the mayor's office and say that get rid of the gatekeepers that are preventing the mayor from having real conversations with the people that need him to take direct action to fix what's broken in the Portland Police Bureau. I agree with that. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Dave. Welcome to K-Boo.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm okay. You know, I'm African American, and I have two cousins in law enforcement. One is the mayor of the city.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I have a question that I've been wondering for years. What are the national statistics on black cops that shoot unarmed black men? Or white men, for that matter. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I really appreciate that question. And I was involved in a Facebook thread that was having that conversation earlier this week. To my knowledge, there is no official data that says, you know, how many black cops have shot unarmed white community members. I suspect that it probably doesn't exist. But I can tell you that data shows that female officers use significantly less force than white male officers do across the board. So I don't know, but I would suspect that if a black cop was shooting and killing unarmed white people, I suspect he would not be a cop for too long. I suspect that is so, which is probably why there's no data on how many black police officers kill. He would probably either be a dead cop or he would just no longer be a cop anymore. So I just don't think that I don't think that the reason that those statistics don't exist is because that doesn't happen. Back to the phone line. Hello, Francis. Welcome to K-Boo.
Hi.
Hi.
Enough is enough. For real. I appreciate you taking that from the mayor.
Well, thank you.
I understand that the city of St. Louis has a no-fly zone now.
Yes, I heard that also.
For the police to be protected, for their protection, supposedly. But now news reporters can't fly their helicopters over the city to see what's going on at all.
And two reporters were arrested yesterday because they were taking pictures of the cops brutalizing people.
Yeah, this is just fascinating to me. Charlie Hills already knows, and I think I spoke on this a couple weeks ago. I'm a Caucasian person, and I've been around a lot of Caucasian people all my life. I'm also married to an African-American man who just survived another 20-year stint in Oregon's penitentiary. And the white people know. That's what's making me so angry right now, is they can pretend they don't know.
Right.
We walked around his gentrified neighborhood over there in the first city's urban renewal and realized that he was a victim of that profiling when he was a young man. You know, he went to McLaren when he was about 10 years old for no person-to-person crime.
Wow. At 10?
And, yeah. And he lived in that first urban renewal area. And now we walk through our old neighborhood in Sabin, and he's just amazed. He said, wow, they're everywhere.
Oh, yeah. And,
yeah. Yeah, and but we're going to write a book about all this. This is what's making me very happy right now, is that we realize it's jailed. We've been talking about writing a book for 20 years, but now it's all coming together, and the truth shall be told. But Charlie Hills already knows, and I just want a way to just call him on the carpet and say, man, come on, enough is enough.
Well,
I need to do this right. Do it right. Because he knows.
Yes, he does. I mean, I don't know if he knows. I mean, I don't know.
Well, he should know.
He appears to be very disconnected.
Like he doesn't know.
He appears to be very disconnected from what's happening in the police bureau. He appears to have turned over police reform to Chief Mike Reese, which is pretty ludicrous in anybody's opinion. You know, I don't know what he knows, and I don't know if he's paying attention.
It's kind of sad thing that a person can be elected mayor and not know anything.
It is a sad thing, especially when you run on the platform of you're going to fix what's broken with the police department.
Right.
And then you get there and you put a low-level police officer as the gatekeeper to prevent the public from telling you what's really going on. Thank you, Francis, for your call.
Progressive Portland needs to truly be progressive and stop playing whatever little exotic game they're playing right now.
Thanks for your call, Francis.
Get real.
Yeah, have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And, you know, we have heard, I've certainly heard here from the houseless community that police use private security guards sometimes to rouse people. Because they're not committing a crime, they'll use the security guards to actually move people. I got a text from someone talking about Westlake Mall cops. So there's like this protest happening at the mall. This was a protest about Gaza, and so some white guy comes through the crowd, starts creating problems. Security guard runs into the crowd and looks around. And and decides that it's the black guy that's creating a problem, so he maces him. But yet he hadn't done anything. The black guy is just like walking through, trying to get through the mall. But he ends up being the one maced, because in the security guard's eye, if you walk up and you see a black guy and you see a white guy, and there's some kind of inappropriate behavior happening, it must be the black guy that's actually contributing to the inappropriate behavior. And so his immediate response was to actually pepper spray the black guy. This is the society that we're building when liberals are silent about this continuous focus on black boys and brown boys, quite frankly. I mean, when you we live in a community where just a few weeks ago there was a 500-page report that was produced by law enforcement personnel throughout Multnomah County. It is called the Multnomah County Gang Assessment Report. Remember that 500-page report that says gang members are, by definition, three or more people who hang out together and self-identify as such. When I told the mayor that would mean that there's at least three gangs operating within my family, because I'm from a family of 10, so we have at least three gangs operating at any given time based on the official definition of gang members. So the problem with that is that report will now be used to write for federal dollars to have an impact on 133 gangs that they say are operating in the Portland metropolitan area. And so when I read about the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division investigating in New York, that does not give me hope. When I hear about the FBI doing an individual investigation in St. Louis, that does not give me hope, because what I know is that the federal government has created the incentives for local police forces to obtain significant resources if they are targeting gangs, if they are targeting drugs, if they are targeting activity that has been framed as a community crisis, but it's framed as gang activity, but that's really code word for black and brown kids until they prove otherwise. And that's a problem. So this report that's sitting out there that isn't getting a whole lot of public scrutiny is going to be the tool that then becomes used to justify buying tanks and buying excessive warlike equipment. I'm going to go back to the phone line. If you want to join us, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Dave. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. I'm a 59-year-old white man who's never had a bad police encounter, and maybe I'll be lucky and live another 20 years without running into that.
Knock on wood.
But I have some politically incorrect questions. Why should police departments not have racial quotas? and higher than residency, why should a city, why shouldn't a city with a 10%, say, African-American population be forced to have 15% African-American cops? Why should there not be residency requirements? And these days, this is the big politically incorrect suggestion. Perhaps military combat veterans are unfit for civilian police work and they should not be recruited.
Oh, so you got quite a few of them there, Dave. Let's start with the last one first. Psychological exam that people take in order to determine their fitness to be police officers, it wasn't until the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform started investigating that we found out that the city of Portland had contracted with the same psychologist for the last 14 years. And every time his contract ran out, they would just sign an extension for another couple of years, right? So there'd been no real process to actually obtain a good psychologist to determine whether or not people are fit for service. Now, you raise a good point with the military, but in addition to people who've had military service, the fact that we screen police officers to be effective liars rather than screen police officers to be effective community police officers is how we got into the situation we're in right now. And I'm speaking specifically about Portland. I suspect other police departments do very similar things. Ironically, after being caught, we end up now with another contract with this same psychologist who I understand has pretty much locked up psychological evaluations for the state of Oregon. He has contracts with just about every police agency in the state of Oregon. So you got to ask yourself, how could one person work for all the policing agencies in the Portland metro area? And aren't there other psychologists who could do this job? But having said that, so that's one piece. This whole psychological exam has to be reexamined to make sure that we are hiring compassionate, empathetic community servants rather than people that are ready to go to war. Residency requirements. Absolutely. If you don't live in a community you serve, how could you possibly know what the community norms are in that community?
Because that would seem to be, the lack of that would seem to be setting people up to act as an occupying army.
Well, sure, because if all you know about the community is what you've seen in your training tapes, and I can tell you that even police training tapes actually start the subconscious reinforcement of who the criminals are in the community. As I watch the training tapes, most of the criminals are black and brown. That's not by accident, right? So you are already putting that idea into people's heads while they're in the academy. Mm-hmm. That's what a criminal looks like, right? And I think I forgot your first question.
My first one was, why shouldn't there be racial quotas for police departments?
I think that police departments should represent the communities they serve. So if you live in a state that has a population that is demographically as diverse as, and it's not that diverse, but even with the diversity we have in the Portland metropolitan area, you would think that the police force in the largest city that represents the largest diversity would have the largest numbers of people of color at every rank within the bureau. That's not what we have here. We have the highest ranking police officer is African American police officer. I can't believe his name just went out of my head. But it'll come back to me. But there's one at a command level. And then there is one that's working out of the chief's office, right? Mm-hmm. But then most of people of color are at the very low level of the police bureau. So are they heading up the gang enforcement units? No. Are they heading up vice and the internal affairs division? No. And so because those positions are
given as a payback or appreciation for the status quo, we don't have that kind of diversity. And quite frankly, we could get there by actually training people more effectively. Unfortunately, the police chief we have now doesn't believe that community members would be effective in coming in and training community police officers. But I thank you very much. I mean, you didn't ask any questions that I thought were inappropriate or hard.
Well, I meant politically incorrect, a little sarcastically, okay. Especially about the hiring of combat veterans.
Right. Well, I do. I think veterans certainly should be scrutinized, because especially if you've been in war for the last decade, and mm-hmm. then you and but. But the reality is that we've turned the police departments into military operations. I mean, when you look at police officers in the community nowadays, it is not, you don't see the officers with the cap on his head and nightstick walking down the street. You yeah. see them armed with weapons all the way up and down their legs, all over their waist. And so when they walk out into a community, they walk out prepared for war. And you know what? Police officers don't break a nail anymore. They'd rather kill somebody than break a nail. I think there's something wrong with a society that thinks that's okay. Because there, even in this community, too many unarmed people are dead because they had something that the officer thought may have been a weapon. But don't we teach people hand-to-hand combat? Don't we teach people control holes? Don't we teach people how to take people down without injuring them? I mean, gosh, the people in the medical community can do that, and they don't have firearms training. And maybe that's why they do that, because they don't have firearms training. And so I just think that we've been asleep at the wheel while we've been creating a military force that is not there to protect and serve us, but that's there to contain us. And I believe that enough is, in fact, enough. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate you being in dialogue with me today. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. Bye. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let me tell you what's coming up today on Naboo at 9, join Teresa Mitchell for Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, KBOO's Linda Olsen Osterlin hosts A Deeper Look. Today's show features Jerry Haynes, a local nurse who recently returned from a medical mission to Gaza. At 10, hear Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 is Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Noam explores the sci-fi world of sleep donation created by author Kern Russell. In her book, A Crisis of Insomnia Has Swept Across America, and healthy dreamers are recruited to donate sleep to the insomniacs under the watchful eye of the Storch Brothers Corporation. At 11:30, it's Words and Pictures, KBOO's monthly program on comics and animation. The show will feature comic artist Lucy Bellwood, who has teamed up with journalists to report on Islamic environmentalists and the women of Getmo, and we'll have a show in Portland this September. Thank you, KBOO listeners, for your generous contributions. If you haven't joined yet, just go to kboo.fm and click the tip jar. We're going to go back to the phone line now. Hello, John. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello. Hi. Came late in the conversation, but I heard last night that one of the aldermen is in police custody.
Oh, yeah. Because he was arrested last night, too? Yeah.
Well, there's such a press, what do you call it, blackout.
Right.
He was arrested for tweaking. For, you know.
Oh, for tweeting?
Tweeting, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, he was, yeah. And he's African-American. And I remember hearing a conversation, interview from him about 2 days ago. And then last night, he was arrested at his house.
Wow.
Yeah, they took him out.
And, I think we should be very, very worried about this. I mean, this is kind we should have a microscope looking into what's happening in St. Louis, because if this happens in St. Louis, it could happen anywhere.
Well, I think when they start picking on politicians, then you're really going to be in trouble. But I just see this as a reminiscent of, you know, how the drug war started. As long as it was in, you know, the black community, nobody cared. But once it would get into the white community, all of a sudden, man, it's number one, you know, everything.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And that's the way it's been, unfortunately, in this country for quite some time.
So, but I just see this as a kind of a parallel. Now they're just warming up on, you know, a police state.
Right. Well, and that's we can see that. I mean, I don't know how the police operate in your community, but when we have 10 police officers stop one individual because they think that he may actually have some drugs on him, that in itself is overkill. And you think about the amount of money we spend ineffectively trying to solve crime. We have to have a conversation about how do we change police departments from this military armed establishment to one that really is about protecting and serving the people.
Well, it might come down to everything comes down to money.
Yes.
And perhaps people know something that the general population doesn't know. I mean, with all this currency devaluation and stuff, maybe this is how they're warming up.
Yes. I mean, that's the scary part to me. I mean, I certainly think that when you all of a sudden, so here we are, all of a sudden, it's a no-fly zone in St. Louis.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there's not martial law, but you can't come out of your house if the police tell you you can't come out of your house. That sounds a lot like martial law to me.
Well, look what happened in Boston, you know. The police, you know, the whole city of, you know, millions of people were clamped down just because of two people.
Yes, yes. Well,
I know. I think this is all kind of, I know this is kind of indirect, but I really think that the economic conditions, I mean, you know, the economy, the currency, and this is how this is sort of like foreplay for them.
I think you're right. I think that this is the quiet before the storm.
Yeah, this is not this is more than just racial.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm focused, of course, on because it seems to be the most expendable people in our community appear to be black.
Yeah,
right?
Well, yeah, that's the punching bag.
Right.
You know? That's the dogs and cats that kick.
But trust me, I understand that it is about power and people who have power and people who are perceived to have no power. And so houseless people of any color are brutalized on the streets in the city of Portland, regardless of what the mayor and the police chief say. It happens every day in the city. But but us middle class folks, we don't see it. We're separated from it. But I think what St. Louis is showing us is that the separation isn't that big, and it just takes a little thing. For all of a sudden, you will be in martial law along with the rest of with me, right? And so you will be caught up in the same net that they will catch me up in.
Well, the same thing happened up around the Detroit area. There was this pastor that was complaining about some things up at this PGA tournament going through up there, whatever.
Right.
And he was arrested too.
Yes. Well, I mean, that seems to be the response, which is why there are so few people that are willing to take on the police. The reality is that it's very dangerous for community members to, on their own, try to stand up to police. Which
but they didn't commit any crime.
Right. Well, but still, I mean, this kid, this 18-year-old, didn't commit any crime either.
No, I know. Right? Yeah. Well, anyway, when politicians started being, you know, harassed, that means the population is completely helpless.
Well, and maybe it goes to show that even the political leadership isn't safe from a police state.
Well, anyway, thanks for your time anyway.
Thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. Have a good day. 503-231-8187. Who else? Hello, Sunny. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Oh, thank you. Hello, Joanne.
Hello.
Good to hear you always.
Thank you.
You know, we need to get Teresa and you two together on this and keep on the hour coverage of what's going on there because, yeah, it is martial law.
Yes.
You know what it is? It's sub-Tiananmen Square. When you don't have helicopter coverage going over and you've got the reporters locked out. We don't know what's going on there with those people.
No, we don't. And I hope it really does create this understanding that how easy that can happen, right? I mean,
it's happening right now. Downtown America, yeah. Heartland, Missouri. It's happening. And guess what? Remember that old thing about, you know, what happened to the Jews, how first they came for this guy. And,
right. First they came for the gypsies, and I wasn't a gypsy, and so I didn't care, right? Then they came for some others, and it wasn't me, so I didn't care, right? Yes, thank you so much. And so I want to make sure that people know that I see that there's at least two actions that are taking place today as it relates to the latest police violence issues that are going on. And so one is at Pioneer Square at 4 p.m., and that is being hosted by Amnesty International. And so it's called a Day of Silence and a gathering at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 4 p.m. our time here. And that will be at Pioneer Square at 4 p.m. In addition to that, I understand at 6 p.m. at Northeast Precinct, there is also going to be a protest march against police. There's going to be a protest rally against police violence. And that starts at 6 p.m. today at the Northeast Precinct. And so there are two events that if people want to get involved in that are happening right here in this community, and hopefully that gets people thinking critically about, so what would we do here if the same martial law was not declared, but yet our movement was limited based on police actions? Thank
you. Well, we'll be there.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your call.
May I say one more thing?
You may.
Okay, the account that I heard on Democracy Now! Of the witness talked about the young man, you know, was shot in the face and in the chest.
Wow.
He'd also been shot previously, but he was shot in the face and the chest, and his body was left there for hours.
That's what I
heard.
That's exactly.
And you know what I think this is? This is a sacrifice type thing. This is how, this isn't just police brutality. This is like purposely going out of their way to get something going so that they can really show how they can bring their fist down, because he had turned towards the police officer with his arms in the air, and they shot him in the face, and they shot him in the chest, and they left his body there for hours and hours and hours.
And that is one of the most egregious things that happens over and over again after
sounds
police.
Sounds like old KKK to
yes,
me.
Yes, it does.
Like old
KKK,
doesn't it?
Well,
there
I mean, that's exactly what the current militarized police force looks like, acts like, sounds like, yes.
And Oregon's an old KKK state, so
yes,
it could happen to us. Yes, it is.
Well, it was the desire was to make Oregon a white homeland, and they've almost been successful.
It still is. Yeah,
yeah,
it still is the desire.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you. Thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Have a great day. 503-231-8187. Bob?
Hey, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. I just wanted to tell a quick story and be brief.
Right.
I totally agree with what you and the last gentleman were saying about the race problems here with police nationwide. But as a union organizer, I wanted to tell you a quick story in Vancouver, and in Portland this happens, but in Vancouver at Fred Meyer, we had a fired worker, and I worked for the Grocery Workers Union.
Mm-hmm.
The worker subsequently was vindicated in every level of the labor board law and the federal law and all that. She was fired wrongly. So we were doing a demonstration on the sidewalk in Vancouver, outside the Fred Meyer in Orchards, and there were 8 squad cars in the parking lot. There were 2 or 3 Fred Meyer security beefy guys at every door with their arms folded, looking mean. And we were just protesting on the sidewalk with faith leaders who were in their collars, who were clearly religious people. We had picket signs. We didn't throw rocks. We didn't do anything. So when one of the faith leaders, when the demonstration was over, and I talked to the cops. I said, we're not going in. Everything's cool. When the demonstration was over, one of the faith leaders called me and said down the street there were 10 more squad cars waiting in another parking lot.
Wow.
So it brings to mind this whole militarization thing.
Yes.
Behind, like, the Japanese saying, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And we are defined as the opponent, whether we're a young black man who's walking around or whether we're a union demonstration. The cops pile out of those cars and we're already defined as the opponent.
That's right.
And so what I'm trying to say is not only is it terrifying that they shoot people in the streets, our civil rights have had the so-called chilling effect thrown on them. How do I go in and get Joanne and Bob and anybody else to come to the next demonstration?
Exactly.
When they look out the store window,
yes,
and they see the cops in a military state with military-grade weapons just waiting for us to do something so they can nail us. It's like our civil rights are eroding, and
right,
the cops are being militarized. And I'm not against cops as a union organizer. I've organized cops in L.A. at the school district and stuff.
Same
so we
here.
Need cops.
Same here.
We don't,
not
yeah,
against
exactly.
cops, right.
So, anyway,
not...
I just wanted to tell you the quick story that...
No,
how do I go as a union organizer or a civil rights organizer or any kind of organizer, get people involved when we pull up in the car
right.
and they go, my God. In fact, union members the next week were asking me, Joanne, if there's another demonstration, is there going to be violence?
Right, right.
And it's like, no, there's not going to be violence, but we are framed as the opponent.
That's
and
right.
The last thing I wanted to say quickly is there was a report nationwide, and I can't remember by what civil rights group or legal group, that this is exactly what's happening. Anyone who protests is framed as the opponent immediately.
Yes, that's right.
And that's really dangerous for our democracy. And by the way, Joanne, thank you for all the work you are doing. In a couple of days, I'm going to retire. I'll still be an activist, but I just want to thank you for the conversations and the energy you bring for justice to our community.
Well, thank you so much, and happy retirement. Go have some fun.
Yes, I'm walking the dog really slow right now.
All right, very cool. Have a great day. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye. And so there's a couple of things that I want to say before we wrap up this program. I want to let you know that, believe it or not, you may remember, I hope you remember, the story of LaToya Harris. She is the young mother whose 9-year-old daughter was arrested by two idiot Portland police officers at New Columbia because of a fight at New Columbia Boys and Girls Club. My understanding is that as per the Hall Monitor and Dennis with the Portland Mercury, the police chief Reese is close to adopting a new policy on arresting children. And my understanding is the policy would require them to not arrest anyone under the age of 12. What I'd like to know about this new policy is what would be the situation where it would be necessary for grown men to arrest a 12-year-old child? Now that we agree that arresting a 9-year-old is a bad idea, why would we arrest a 12-year-old? And why would you take a 12-year-old into custody without having a parent or guardian with them? If you are about to finalize these rules, Chief Reese, these are questions that the public would like to have answered before your new policy goes in place. You may remember that the whole reason a 9-year-old was arrested was because there was no policy that prohibited it. There is also no policy prohibiting arresting an infant, but hopefully we won't have to do that. I believe I have a last caller on the line. Hello, T. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, I'll be quick. Two questions. How do you get people to understand that this is a problem? You know, whoever offers convincing people like, oh, if they got shot, they were doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get them to understand that? And how do you pass legislation and make it so people can express their freedom of speech without feeling threatened by a police presence? Okay.
Well,
I'll take an answer.
Those, both of those are great questions. You're the last caller. He asked great questions. So the first one is we need to do more community education so that people know their rights when they're interacting with the police. As far as the general public is concerned, the general public must take responsibility for bearing witness to traffic and pedestrian stops. So when you see the police making a stop, please stop. pull out your cell phone camera, pull out your iPad camera, take pictures, bear witness, because everybody is safer when the community is watching and paying attention. The last thing I will say is, as far as policy is concerned, we the people will have to take ownership of police reform, and that will be through the ballot box. And so it's a marathon, not a sprint. It's not going to happen overnight, but I do believe that we are at a place where people are tired and they're ready to say enough is enough. I won't see you for about a month, but I will love you madly. I'll see you when I get back from vacation. Hope you're going to have a great time. This has been Joanne Hardesty. Thank you kindly, Steve. Everybody, have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up.
And good morning from the Mighty Boo, KBOO Portland, just before 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. In a half hour from now, it's KBOO's Linda Olson Osterlin hosting A Deeper Look. Today's show features Jerry Haynes, a local nurse who recently returned from a medical mission to Gaza. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints Investigative News Radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman explores the sci-fi world of sleep donation created by author Karen Russell. In her book, A Crisis of Insomnia Has Swept Across America, and healthy dreamers are recruited to donate sleep to the insomniacs under the watchful eye of the Storch Brothers Corporation. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures, KBOO's monthly program on comics and animation. The show will feature comics artist Lucy Bellwood, who has teamed up with journalists to report on Islamic environmentalists and the women of Gitmo, and will have a show in Portland this September. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. If you're not a current member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate today. Stick around. Up next, join Teresa Mitchell for Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know.
The attacks on Gaza and the devastating humanitarian crisis there is unfolding before our eyes. Environmental health conditions were grave there before these latest attacks. Many would like to do something to help the people there. Nurse Jerry Haynes has been able to do just that. Join me, Linda Olson Osterlin, on A Deeper Look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. Back from an April delegation of medical professionals and preparing to go again in October, Jerry Haynes of Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility.